Okay, Tom, so 42% of the audience doesn't know what ROS1 is, and we can maybe get into that, but let's just talk about mutations.
Great, thank you, Neil, and thanks for the chance to talk today. So, Cancer Paradigm 2011, 2012, 2013, we know that tumors are driven by genetic changes. We know that genetic changes are the fundamental paradigm that drives cancer. And this understanding has led to a dramatic improvement in the way we treat CML, in the way we approach gastrointestinal stromal tumor, and in the way we approach a disease like lung cancer. As we talked about with EGFR, and Corey showed you so beautifully, EGFR, ALK, ROS1, maybe RET tomorrow, we're finding that these are driver mutations that can be identified and can impact therapy up front. But one of the key questions is, will there be a lot more of these? And so what you're seeing now is an absolute tidal wave of sequencing data. There are thousands of lung cancers, breast cancers, colon cancers being sequenced every month around the world that will be adding information in the next year to what we understand about these cancers. Unfortunately, the majority of mutations that we're finding, we A, don't know if they are driver mutations, and even if they are, they're in either tumor suppressor genes or transcription factors, which we have no idea how to drug. So the good news is we can sequence. The good news is patients will come to you with a thumb drive. The bad news is we don't necessarily have great options for those patients. So I remain very optimistic that we're going to learn a lot about the biology of these diseases. But the real challenge is going to come from, quote unquote, drugging the undruggable and learning how to deal with tumors that are driven by tumor suppressor genes or tumors that have transcription factors, which are driving their cancer. Well, we've talked about epidermal growth factor receptors in a number of different ways. I think the data that persuades us, and I think the real change in EGFR mutation testing, and this is where I can disclose as someone who is a 1/8 patent holder in this, I can tell you the uptick in use of EGFR mutation testing happened the week after this paper came out. So it really was something that influenced practice in a very dramatic way. It's Tony Mock's paper looking at gefitinib versus carboplatin paclitaxel. And just to refresh your memories, what this showed is that the chemotherapy response rate, if you're mutation positive, was 71%. Response to chemotherapy was 47%. If you're mutation negative, very, very few patients responded to gefitinib in that setting, which is gefitinib, not erlotinib. So I think this is one of the reasons why I chose to use a tyrosine kinase inhibitor in that patient you saw. That response rate, the chance of response, is substantially higher, and that's why I would use it in this setting. Not only this, but progression-free survival was also better in that study, and we've seen that now in several places, and you'll see on Monday at 3 o'clock some evidence looking at BIBW2992, which is a new kinase inhibitor that Leisha and others have worked with that looks very promising in non-small cell lung cancer as well. Now, this drug BIBW2992 has also been looked at with cetuximab as a way of overcoming resistance. So first line, you start with a tyrosine kinase inhibitor. You heard the group talk about what to do with progression. Well, the answer may be to use different combinations of inhibitors. And this is actually some mouse work. It's always good to look at transgenic mice after about 2 or 3 beers. And for those of you in the front row, hopefully you've had a few before you look at these mice. But the bottom line here is the combination of BIBW2992, a dual kinase inhibitor, plus cetuximab, was able to overcome resistance. And not only did it happen in transgenic mice, but it happened in transgenic people. And so you can see here that patients had benefit, a very dramatic waterfall plot, which shows improvement when patients were treated with the combination of cetuximab and 2992. And then also it seems that it did not appear to be dependent upon the presence or absence of the T790M secondary mutation. So again, what this also points out is the need for repeat biopsies to drive therapy as we go forward. Now, what about EML4 ALK? This is a picture of a lung cancer, which is stained for the anaplastic lymphoma kinase. This is a patient who I used to follow when I was at MGH, who was one of the first patients to respond to crizotinib. And as you know, crizotinib is a drug which has moved. Neil's talking about how fast it is that we move from EGFR mutations to changing practice. I think the speed has been obliterated by what's happened in ALK, and tremendously obliterated with what's happened in ROS1. But as you all know, crizotinib is a drug with high activity, and that patient whose immunoproxy, as I showed you earlier, a dramatic response to treatment with crizotinib, and we've now seen this is a broad phenomenon for patients who are EML4-ALK positive, and this has now become standard therapy for patients with EML4-ALK. I know this is a waterfall plot that everyone in this room goes to bed and memorizes and thinks about, but it's worth looking at again. It's an incredibly dramatic picture of improvement from ALK-positive patients treated with crizotinib. And then like EGFR mutated lung cancer, we also see that secondary mutations can occur which confer resistance. I want to just finish in the last 2 minutes by sharing some observations that were made by John Iafredi and Alice Shaw at MGH. ROS is a tyrosine kinase. It's a protein tyrosine kinase which is seen in patients with lung cancer and can be translocated. And when it's translocated in lung cancer, it can be a driver mutation. It can drive the malignant phenotype. And this was discovered by John and Alice in a number of patients who were EGFR wild type, ALK wild type, and they were patients who also had never smoker phenomena. It's also been seen in glioblastoma and in cholangiocarcinoma. Now, interestingly, ROS is also sensitive to inhibition with crizotinib, so it becomes an important drug that could be used in this setting. And so here, when one looks at, and this is from Alice's and John's paper, when one looks at the ability of crizotinib to inhibit phospho-ALK activity, crizotinib is a very potent inhibitor of phospho-ALK, and if you look at ROS1, again, this is much better after the second glass of wine, when one looks at phospho-ROS1, you can see, again, dramatic inhibition, great potency of the drug in this setting. And this is a patient that Alice first showed me about 8 to 9 months ago now and led to their publication. Well, not this patient. Well, this patient probably led to their publication as well. And this is a TT scan of a gentleman, a 31-year-old man from Miami that came to see Alice, who is a Nigerian gentleman who came in with a CT scan in April of 2011 with impressive disease in the left lung and extensive disease as well in the right lung. This is a gentleman who had been treated with chemotherapy, treated with erlotinib, had an oxygen saturation of 60%, hematocrit of 60, and a PS of 1, and really was an extraordinary trouble at that point. Given crizotinib, 8 weeks later, dramatic improvement. And this comes to the point of the rapidity of response, which we talked about earlier. Tyrosine kinase inhibitors can have fast responses, which is one of the reasons why I answered the question that way. Thank you.